Running a Shopify store and drowning in shipping chaos? ShipStation can fix this for you. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels with advanced automation, batch processing, and shipping discounts that a single platform just doesn't offer. Like discounts up to 90% off major carriers. See how ShipStation can make shipping for your Shopify store better. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days. A 101-night sleep trial and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices. Up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep. Upgrade your life. Ghostbed. The coolest beds in the world.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Nuance Needed podcast. I'm Amanda White, and I'm really excited to have Whitney Goodman back on the podcast. How are you, Whitney?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm excited to chat with you because you are you're an incredible expert, I would say, on estrangement. It's really what you specialize in with your work at Calling Home, with your podcast. And I feel like the past couple weeks have been this insane explosion of estrangement content. So you were the perfect person that I wanted to dig into all of this with.
Thank you. It has been a weird explosion of this content everywhere, like every mainstream news outlet for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially around the holidays. It's like, I get why they're running this content around the holidays, but it also feels especially like hurtful, I feel like.
100%.
Yeah. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about just like your background, what Calling Home looks like, so people fully understand the context of why you're an expert in this?
Yeah, totally. So I am a marriage and family therapist by training. I've always worked with family dynamics, but around 2020 during COVID, I was really just like noticing that every one of my clients was talking about their relationships, particularly with their parents. And I worked with a lot of young adults at the time. And so it just kind of naturally became such a focus for me. And I started writing about it and doing more content on it and noticed that, wow, there's a lot of people out there that aren't talking about this, but that really need help. And through that, I started doing a lot around adult children of emotionally immature parents, adults who are estranged from a parent, and then also working with like estranged siblings and things like that. And it just was sort of luck that this became like such a cultural moment, you know, several years later. Like now we're probably 5 years into me doing this and everybody is talking about it a lot more now. So I did start Calling Home, which is our online community for people who want to improve their family relationships, not just estrangement, at the end of 2023. And since then, we've grown, you know, into a space where we have groups for all different types of family issues, weekly content, as well as the podcast. And this is something that I feel like I haven't gotten tired of talking about yet. Yeah. So I think it's a good sign that I'm in the right place. And it seems like it's really needed right now.
Absolutely. Well, I also love about your content, Whitney, that you actually really dig into all of the research, where a lot of what is talked about with estrangement is like thoughts that people have about it. I think especially because typically people who, not marriage and family therapists, but a lot of times people who are interested in estrangement content one way or the other are often emotionally attached to it and maybe biased in some way. So I love that you and all of your content is really actually just based in research. And I wanted to start by getting into some of the myths. And one of the big myths I heard you talking about was this myth of these kids that were raised really well, came from great homes, and just woke up one day and decided that they didn't want a relationship with their parents. Can you tell me more about that and the research behind it?
Yeah, so I totally agree with you that I think most of the people coming to this issue are coming to it from a good place of like, they have a friend that this happened to, or it happened to them, or they're seeing it on social media. And so they're just sort of like pontificating, but from the perspective of like, I know everything about this because this is what happened with like my friend Judy's kid down the street, and they don't know anything else outside of that. So I've tried to take this from sort of like a perspective from above. I like to tell people, like, I'm not estranged from my parents. I'm not estranged from my children. Like, this isn't something that I'm bringing a personal bias to, which all the stuff out there, literally every book written on the subject, and there's nothing wrong with this. It's just, I think it's different when you are telling your personal story than if you're approaching it from the angle that we're talking about. The problem that I find with a lot of with this myth is that I have not been able to interact with these people. So I have surveyed close to 5,000 adults who are estranged from a parent. I run groups like 8 times a month with this demographic. We have discussion boards at Calling Home. I'm like the most immersed I think you can be in this. Mm-hmm. And I have yet to find an adult come to me and report like, you know what, having a relationship with my parent was just like kind of annoying, mm-hmm. or they were great, but I didn't feel like talking to them anymore, so I cut them off. And I'm not saying that that doesn't exist, because mm-hmm. certainly there are outliers when it comes to anything.
Yeah.
I just get really confused on why we're assuming that that's the big population here, rather than like we have an epidemic of child abuse, emotional neglect, child maltreatment in this country that we are very aware of.
For someone who's listening that's like, I don't think we have an epidemic of abuse, what would you say that might help them understand the context of this?
Yeah. So I understand why people don't think that, because we don't want to talk about this, like especially when it comes to parents or caregivers being the most likely to abuse their children. We don't want to believe that that's true, because that goes against everything that we hear about motherhood and parenthood of like, you will just innately know how to love your child and mm-hmm. be the best mom. And you and I have both talked about this in different ways. Like, that's not true for everybody. And that's a scary thought, that when you have a baby, something isn't just going to click in your head and magically make you good at it. So we do know that like that is the most likely person to hurt kids. And a lot of that is, yes, of course, that's the child. That's who the child is spending the most time with, but they also have the most access to the child. Mm-hmm. They have great institutional privilege. And we grow up with messaging that like your parents know best. They're always mm-hmm. right. You should listen to what they say. That I think it's very, very difficult for kids to come forward mm-hmm. and say what happened to them in their own homes. In fact, everything is fighting against them. Systemically, culturally, and within their own families, that leads me to believe that we are not really ready to like mm-hmm. accept what's going on here.
And I think spanking is such a good example to me of how controversial not spanking or being against spanking still is. To me, when I started digging into that, I was like, this feels like the red herring of all of this.
Yeah. It's so, I saw something the other day about like that a lot of millennial parents are actually not against spanking in mm-hmm. certain contexts. And there's this new type of spanking, right? Where you're supposed to like calm yourself and explain to the child what you're going to
do. Oh my God, I didn't even know that.
Yes. So this is like the good regulated type of spanking, that doing it like abusively out of, this is what they're calling it, you know,
yeah,
in the moment full of anger, is not very in style anymore. But there are a lot of parents like with kids our age that I think feel, or kids the age of our children, I'm trying to say, that like they feel like if I get calm and I explain it, it can still be like effective, which I found very interesting.
I feel like that's almost worse. Like, I'm going to be real. I'm not doing this out of I can't control myself in an outburst and an accident. I am intentionally striking you.
Yes. And like, I get, obviously, we all get super dysregulated with our kids and overwhelmed. And like, I have felt becoming a parent, and I don't know if you relate to this, has like made me feel like I understand how parents lose it. Like, I can feel it. And if I didn't have like all the support that I have, I could see how you would like get close to that point.
Yeah.
The idea of like calming myself down and then walking over to my kid and being like, now I'm going to, like,
it's so much worse. I don't
get myself to do it if someone was like making me.
Yeah. Oh my God. That's crazy. I did not know that. That is so fascinating. Yeah. I think for me too, it's just, it's very simple in terms of, obviously there are nuances to a child is not an adult, but it's very clear to me that if it's illegal to to hit someone else, it should be illegal to hit your child. Again, that's not to say that like people don't make mistakes. Like, I do believe people don't mean to do things sometimes and they act out and stuff like that. But the belief that it is good is shocking to me. Like, it would be one thing if we were just like, yeah, that happens and that sucks.
Right.
But we're like, no, this is an important thing that builds character.
Yes. Yes. It's really hard for me to wrap my head around.
Yeah. So we've covered, right, how there's sort of this epidemic. It sounds like spanking is a really big part of that. For people that aren't super aware of emotionally immature parents, like, how do you talk about that? And I think that's a hard one for people, because even if it's wild that people think spanking is good, I think if you listen to the argument we just said, I think you could be like, okay, maybe that's not great. But I think emotional immaturity is complex and murkier and much harder to explain to people.
Yeah, totally. I think one of the biggest misconceptions there is that you're either like emotionally immature or you're not, right? Mm-hmm. And really, this is a scale, and you're going to find parents or people in your life that are extremely emotionally immature and some that just have some qualities. And you and I both, especially under stress or during certain circumstances, mm-hmm. can be more emotionally immature. Like, there are times I can think of off the top of my head where I've not been acting from like my most mature self. And so seeing it as a spectrum is important, rather than being like, my parent is either emotionally immature or they're not, right?
Yeah.
But I think what you're going to find, and this is a lot of what like Dr. Gibson talks about in her book on the subject, is that it's very hard to have any type of difficult conversation with this type of parent. It's hard to bring anything up. They feel very fragile. And so it's like you're walking on eggshells. You can only talk about a very narrow view of things. And what's so fascinating about, I think, the conversation of like estranged parents to mm-hmm. their adult children is that they describe their children often as the way that they are themselves. Right. And so there's a lot of projection going on of like, I feel like I just can't say anything. I'm walking on eggshells. I have to be perfect all the time. And I think those are things sometimes that emotionally immature people feel, because they do not know how to regulate, how to handle disagreements. Conflict is very threatening for them. They have a lot of shame. And so if your parent feels like that, like you're always, you're kind of gentle parenting your parent.
Yeah.
They likely, you know, can have a lot of those emotionally immature qualities. And these are things that are malleable. Like, you can improve your emotional maturity. It's just that you have to be able to say, oh, I didn't react that well. And that's a big barrier for people. Like, if you can't get to that point, you're never going to change it.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think that's such a good point about how they describe their kids. And it almost does kind of become a self-fulfilling prophecy, I think, where if you can't bring things up with people, you are going to sort of be tiptoeing around them. Or if you can't take feedback, like, I think about myself and my addiction, and I like could not, I was so defensive. I had so much shame. I was incapable if someone like gave me anything that wasn't good feedback of sitting in the discomfort of it, I would just like turn it all around on someone else. But I did feel like everyone was attacking me because I created an environment, right? If you can't listen to feedback, if you can't have an authentic conversation with someone, if you can't even hear what they're saying and you become defensive, it is going to make the other person sort of not attack you necessarily, but be more assertive in a way that may feel very threatening to you.
Yeah, they keep getting like louder and louder to try to be heard. But I think it's so important, and I hope gives people listening like permission that you say that, because you're a therapist, you know these things. You've noticed that there were times in your life where maybe you were being quote unquote the problem and you were rejecting positive influence like from your family and I think or people around you in general, and you have to be able to say that.
Yeah.
To do anything. And this isn't about like someone being better than another person or anything. Like I wasn't born with these skills. Like you have to learn them.
Yeah.
And so I think for you to be able to say that and be like, look, now I am in this position is very helpful for people.
Yeah. What do you make of when people kind of say that it's an epidemic, it's getting worse, and people are trying to find a reason, which we'll get into, but what are your first thoughts when people say this is getting worse and it's trendy?
Yeah, I hate it. I mean, people have heard me get angry about this like 100 times. I do think it's become much more visible. I think that people are going about it in much more deliberate, concrete ways that we are not used to seeing. I also think that parents and family members have unprecedented access to the people that they are harming that we have never seen before. So I have heard so many stories about a parent creating burner phones, different Facebook accounts, emails, showing up at their house, showing up at grandkids' performances. Like, it's not like the old days where you could just cut off your phone or move away and they couldn't find you. So the lanes that people have to go to eliminate some of this harm from their life are much greater than they used to be able, you know, to do before. And I think that is becoming much more obvious. And that's also why people feel worse. There are parents who, I read a study the other day, I can't remember the exact numbers, but parents and young adults are texting one another like thousands of times in a month. Like it was an insane amount. And so I think that when a kid pulls away some, it leaves this huge void that parents didn't used to feel when their adult children would move away. And that's why we're saying like, it's an epidemic. They went away to college and they stopped talking to me. Like, these are normal developmental stages that kids have always been going through. Social media also, I have a very different perspective on, I think, than other therapists. I think we're hearing about it a lot more on there because these kids are so comfortable. I'm calling them kids, they're adults, but they're comfortable picking up a phone and recording themselves and talking about themselves. That's very taboo. I mean, now a lot of these boomers are doing it too. It's not so taboo. It should maybe be a little more taboo for some of these parents, but I think that we see that and we're like, oh my gosh, where before people didn't talk about this. It was very hush-hush and very wrong, like to speak ill about your family in this way. So people would just lie.
It sounds like maybe also with some of the, you know, over-parenting, intensive parenting that's happening, maybe millennials don't have kids that are adults right now. But in terms of that, like, I wonder if that's part of it also, where there's just an intenser level of communication, which then makes the gap more obvious when they go away. Is that what you were thinking?
Absolutely. And if you spend any time in, like, I've been using these for some research, like Facebook groups of parents whose kids have recently gone away to college, it's next level. It's nuts.
Wow. That's such a good idea to be in these for research. That's fascinating,
Whitney. A lot of them are public, which is wild to me.
Right. You don't have to say, I am in a, like, this is why I should join. I'm in a strange parent.
Like, anyone can go and find this. And so I was reading something the other day that was like, you know, my daughter's roommate is allergic to peanuts. She can't have peanut butter in her room. Like, things like this, like, should she get a new roommate? My kid's schedule doesn't allow them to get from point A to point B quick enough. Like, just next level helicoptering that I've said this many times. I really think this is why a lot of young adults are like, I can't talk to you anymore because they cannot breathe. It's not that they hate their parents or they think they were abusive, but like some of these parents will not drop the reins. And I had a cell phone. I mean, we had phones when we went to college and I kept in touch a lot with my parents, but I don't remember them like meddling in like my courses and like my roommate. I don't know. It just, it's a really intensive level of parenting that I think for a young adult becomes crippling.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, I think that is a big issue with technology of just how over in communication. I talk about this a lot with Sam about how even like with friendship and things like that, like we were not meant to have find my friends on all of, right? And like be able to know when our friends were hanging out without us and like Snapchat and all of these things. It's just not good for us to be this plugged in to every single thing because that it just like doesn't capture the nuance. And I think I talk about this a lot too of I think because of how much access we have to tracking things, we like get addicted to the tracking because it's like reassurance seeking. And I think about with parents, with grades, with all of these things, they're able. I mean, I haven't, right? Like my child goes to daycare. Like they're really bad actually at updating the app, but just probably good. Maybe not. I don't know. Right? Like you can watch what your child, I mean, some of them have video cameras at daycares, right? Like I get it. Like there's safety concerns and the world is insane. So I'm always trying to balance like what's appropriate. But we used to, like, I also think about how the erosion of trust has impacted us. Like as we erode trust in our communities, in other people, it makes parenting more intense, which then means you can't like share the load as much, which means you're going to have more anxiety and you're going to track. And yeah, it makes so much sense that these kids need, they're trying to create space.
Totally. And the erosion of trust that you're talking about, I think is so important because it's like two factor here where when we're talking about these young adults that are, you know, between 18 and 21, you erode your trust in your adult child to be self-sufficient when you overly monitor them, right? So you're ultimately telling them, I do not trust your ability to make good decisions, to keep yourself safe. And of course, I know sending your kid to college right now is scary. We have shootings going on. And, you know, if you have a daughter, you could be more scared about certain things than others. Like, I totally understand that. But I see these very anxious parents and they fuel each other a lot of the time in these discussions. There's also a certain type of parent that joins those groups, right? Because I'm kind of like, I would never be in one of those groups. Like that's not my personality. And like, I don't want to know what all of you are thinking about this stuff. It overwhelms me and it detaches me from like my own intuition with my kid. Mm-hmm. And so I think those parents are already looking, they feel unsure and kind of like at sea without a paddle about their parenting, which makes the anxiety grow even more.
Totally. I think the other big myth is that therapists are encouraging estrangement or that it's trendy or cool. What does the research say? What is your perspective on that?
Yeah, I love this myth. It's so interesting. It's fascinating how many comments I get a day being like, you want to break families apart to make money. And I'm always like, God, the easier ways I could make money. Like I could be an influencer and like sell stuff on TikTok shop and like make way more money. Like there are so many other ways that I would do it that don't involve destroying the American family. That it's just like bizarre. And I think that's how confused people are. I think people don't understand what happens in therapy because it has been so behind closed doors. And you and Sam talk a lot about this, that like therapy, good therapy, I should say, isn't a therapist just sitting there and being like, you're right to everything that you say. Like I can think of clients this week that I've been like, you know what? That doesn't really sound totally right. Like you ask questions, you try to get a little bit deeper. Like the therapist doesn't just co-sign everything that someone says. therapy is also sometimes, and I think this is true for social media now too, the first place where people go and they learn, wait, I don't have to do this.
Yeah.
And so that can make it feel like the therapist told your kid to cut you off. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's what's happening. As always, there are bad therapists out there. We've both met them. I see them on the internet and you're like, what? Like, it happens.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's the vast majority, and I don't think it's the driving factor behind people ending relationships with their parents. In fact, most people I talk to report the exact opposite, mm-hmm. that they had therapists who told them, it's your mom. You got to learn to deal with her. And they were actually very pushy in the opposite direction.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll never forget, you know, learning the hard way as a therapist, just how, you know, just how little control we have, and how you watch someone in therapy and they can be very motivated to, you know, I'm thinking a lot of how I think of things is in terms of addiction. And I remember, you know, people being so motivated, ready to stay sober, ready to take my recommendation to go to, you know, a higher level of care, whatever it is, and they go home. And it is actually much easier to keep status quo than to buck against it. And I think that's a really important frame that's sometimes missing, is it's actually much – I mean, obviously, if you're like being – you know, if your parents are actually abusive, it takes a lot of courage to change and it is better for you. But in terms of whenever I'm thinking about how it's trendy and it's fun and people just like want to cut off people, I think about how hard it is to do that. I think about how much effort it takes to sustain that long term. And I think people just think that I'll just get estranged, I'll just do this thing, and then I'll feel better and everything will be great and I'm not actually dealing with life. And I think what's really hard in the nuance here is with friendship and other relationships, I think that's true. Like, if you don't have a deep, long friendship with someone, it is easier to cut them off than have a relationship.
Way less consequences, right?
Yes, yes.
When we're talking about ending a relationship, especially with a parent, the consequences are often losing your network.
Yep.
Financial consequences, maybe where you're living. You have a deep, long attachment to them. You're maybe losing connection to your religion, your culture, other parts of your identity, an inheritance. Like, it's big. It is way easier for sure to cut off, especially a friend that you've known for a couple of years. You know, I think that is a completely different situation. And that's also something we have to remember, is that I think estrangement between especially parent and child is fundamentally different from any other type of cutoff that exists.
Yes. Yes. And I think it's because of what you, right, you would say, because of the attachment. And I'm sure research backs this up, but it is the like one relationship we are so biologically driven to maintain.
And you cannot disconnect from that. Like, let's say, you know, you get a divorce, and even if you had children with that person is your ex. They are not part of you now. I cannot relinquish, whether you're adopted, anything, who you got your DNA from and who you are, you know, genetically connected to in this world, that even if you don't have a relationship with them, that person is part of you, like for better or worse. And you can look like them and act like them and have predispositions for certain illnesses, like you cannot get rid of.
Yeah.
And that's tough. Like, people can't, they can never fully get away from that, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up, because I think that is sort of, I think sometimes people are surprised how Sam and I talk about estrangement, considering how much we say, like, stop protecting your peace, or maybe cutting off isn't the answer. And that is the nuance to me, is that this relationship is so fundamental. And I mean, I think it's so fascinating, and you and I've talked about this before, like, nothing made me less on a parent's side than having a child, in terms of, I just really, I wish as a society we were more clear. And obviously women's bodies, rights, all of that, abortion makes this harder. But it should, it, like, I really brought my child in the world being like, this is my choice. I am choosing to bring this child in the world. The child did not choose to be born. And I will, like, that is part of being a parent, is you protect them. Like, I love how you talk about, Whitney, how, yeah, maybe you're not actively parenting their, your child long term, but like, will you talk about how the, like, what the role of a parent is and how we sometimes forget about that?
So something that I say that is weirdly controversial is that I think that parents are always leaders in their children's lives. And that doesn't mean that they call the shots, they make all the decisions. It means that they set the tone. And so an example of that, I think, around like events and stuff would be that you can like rest easy knowing that if you bring your parents into your home or you go visit them, that they are going to be calm and regulated and understanding and consider you. And really, I think like Lindsay Gibson says, like, treat you like a friend that's in their home. I feel like that is a lifelong job for a parent. And I think about this even with my little kids that like, when I get home from work, it's my job to set the tone for the evening. Like if I am frazzled and angry, like that's not fair to them. They have to share this house with me and they don't get to choose that. And so that to me never goes away. And even when a child is doing the worst things that they can do, you know, to you, I think that's unfortunately a burden that we just carry as parents for life, that I've got to find a way to be more mature in this moment and figure out a way to deal with my feelings that doesn't include you.
Yeah. What do people say that, like, when you say that's controversial, like, what are people's responses to that?
Yeah, it's funny. You know, I get a lot of like, so I'm supposed to just do this till I die.
Yes.
People who felt very pressured into doing this, and when they did it, thought, I will get to clock out when they reach 18. Or that was a cultural belief that they had, that like, you just get them out the door and then you're done. So that's hard to fight against. I also get this a lot of like, well, they're going to give me that energy, I get to give it, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So these parents will often weaponize the child's addiction, mental health, the spouse that they brought around as a reason for them to get to act the same or worse, yeah, than how their kid is acting. And those are the two biggest ones, I think, is like, I'm tired, I don't want to do this. And well, my kid's crazy, so I get to be crazy too.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I think it is just so, because yeah, like you said, it just, to me, it's such a red herring where it's just like, you wouldn't have a friend at your house and be acting like this. You wouldn't, when you treat your adult children differently than you would treat another consensual relationship in your life, the stakes should be higher for your adult child, not less than how you would treat a friend.
And that is what is so, I think, confusing for adults, yeah, who have emotionally immature parents or who are estranged from a parent, is that their parent is often loved, respected, highly regarded in the community because they don't show that side to other people. They only show it to them, which, yeah, then becomes this feeling of like, what am I doing to make you act like that around me? The child always internalizes that, of course. Yeah. But to me, it says they know that that behavior is not socially acceptable.
Yeah.
They know it's not okay. And of course, there's some fringe ones, like we started talking about the Wall Street Journal article. Like, those are parents with pathology that they don't even care if they're showing this to, yes, the world. But there are a lot who, they treat their friends, the members of their congregation, their employees, 3 million times better than they treat their children. And those people would be shocked to hear how they speak to their kids.
Okay. So if you're listening to this episode and feeling like, oh my gosh, I could actually really use a therapist, we've got you. My practice, Therapy for Women Center, has therapists licensed in 43 states across the country. All the therapists are hired by me, trained by me, handpicked by me, and we really back and support our therapists. We vouch for them, unlike some of these big online therapy platforms. Also, if you're local to the Philadelphia area, we have 3 office locations there. So I would love for you to go to our website, therapyforwomencenter.com, and check it out.
If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
Stop blaming it on holiday stress. We all know it's that time of year when everything feels drained, both your wallet and you. Well, the real problem is right under you. It's that saggy, old, unsupportive mattress. Well, say hello to Ghostbed. Ghostbed is family-run, consumer-loving, with over 20 years of mattress-making mastery. They've engineered the perfect sleep weapon. Durable, insanely comfortable, and cool enough to keep you chill all night long. Every Ghostbed packs their exclusive ProCore technology, a powerhouse support system that cradles your back, supports, and aligns your spine. Translation? You wake up feeling like a human again. Hot sleeper? Ghostbed's cooling materials fight heat 24/7, so you don't wake up sweaty, even when the thermostat that's cranked up. And here's the kicker. Fast, free shipping in just 2 to 5 days, a 101-night sleep trial, and up to a 25-year warranty. That's confidence. Right now, Ghostbed is slashing prices, up to 50% off compared to other brands. And because you're listening, you score an extra 10% off site-wide. Just use promo code PODCAST at checkout. That's PODCAST for 10% off on top of already insane deals. Upgrade your sleep, upgrade your life. Ghostbed, the coolest beds in the world.
I really love what you said about like setting the tone in your house and stuff like that. That's like a good gut check for me. And I love that you've said before, Whitney, you weren't to blame for acting in developmentally appropriate ways. And I can relate. Like, I have a very active 2.5-year-old right now. I definitely feel like it's a lot and I get overwhelmed. But, and it doesn't mean you have to act perfectly, but I do always have the context and try to remember, like, this is developmentally appropriate for her, even if she's like kicking the dog and I'm trying to like separate them. It doesn't mean she's like a bad kid. And the amount of shame I think we have for kids going through normal developmental processes, which thank God we have the research to understand that now, but it's, yeah, it's crazy when you think about it.
It's hard. Like, I don't want anyone to like listen to me and think that it's always like you're so regulated. And I mean, I've talked to you about my son sleeping, but he was up last night from 1 to 4:30, not for any particular upsetting reason, just wanted to hang, you know, was happy, missed us, wanted to get Hanukkah presents in the morning, night, needed water. Like, he's in a great mood. He just comes in like one and we're like, oh my God, we need to sleep. And I get so triggered around sleep. Like, that's a thing for me that I have to constantly repeat to myself, like, he's not trying to make me not sleep. He's not trying to upset me, where I think that was such the rhetoric for so long with parents, that if your kids were doing something bad, they were being manipulative. I think we need to do that with adult kids as well, that sometimes they're just going through something and it's not about you. And we have to like remove ourselves from the behavior. It's hard.
Yeah. I think I'm just trying to explain all of the nuance of this and be clear that I think we're kind of circling around parental estrangement is very unique and different than other types of estrangement. What about sibling estrangement?
Yeah. Sibling estrangement is like the second most popular topic, I think, that we talk about at Calling Home that is really being brought to light now. I feel like a lot of siblings don't speak and they don't talk about it, or they are not close to one another. It's one of those things that I have started to sort of like look for socially more and more, like how people talk about it that I wasn't aware of. And people are very embarrassed about not being close to a sibling. There's a lot of shame. I come from the perspective that like sibling issues, a lot of the time, are parent issues, I think. There are also genetic differences between siblings. And I really think sibling relationships come down to luck.
Yeah.
A lot of the time.
You could be so different.
I think people imagine that if I met my sibling out, they would be my best friend. And this does happen for some people, but there's something very unique about those people that they think it's their relationship, but really it's the fact that they've followed the same life path a lot of the time. They really have shared so many life experiences because they are very similar and they value the same things and have the same interests. And a lot of that is luck. Like, it's not necessarily that you guys are just amazing. Now, there's also, I think, becoming a greater tolerance for having distant but supportive relationships with siblings. We talked about the communication thing, and I think siblings feel a lot of pressure now to keep in touch all the time, and it means they're not close if they don't. But there are a lot of siblings that I've spoken to, you know, even in my social life, that actually feel very close and incredibly bonded to their sibling, and they don't talk a lot because they have nothing in common right now.
Yes.
And so I think the more we can normalize that, the less we will see this need for like cut off. Because I think sometimes people think like there's something wrong with my sibling relationship if I don't feel super close to them. Now that's of course different than I have worked quite a bit lately with sibling abuse and child on child sexual abuse that happened when siblings were young. And like, that's a whole different ball game, right? Yes. Where you're going to see estrangement between siblings. I also see sibling estrangement happen as a result of alliances with parents.
Sometimes the parent probably tells them.
100%. That absolutely happens. Or, you know, the parents like the siblings fighting. That's a sad reality too, that they get something from that. And when your parent doesn't foster relationships between you and your sibling at all, that's tough too.
Yeah, I like the whole idea of normalizing it. And I think it does go back to sort of technology, our expectations. Even if you look in media of what siblings look like and are supposed to, I'm very interested in all of that because I have an only child and I had to like think about the narrative, right? Of, do I want more than one child, or do I want a the whole best friend? I'm going to birth your best friend. And even just like in media, it's crazy. I remember reading an article about like Dax Shepard and his wife and how they, in an interview, talked about how they told the sibling, like, you were born for, like, this is your best friend. Like, we create, like, you guys have to stick together because you were created for each other. And that is so much pressure that goes into what you were talking about with, there must be something wrong if we're not close. And yeah, like, if that was, especially, I think there is a lot of pressure on siblings to like each other, have the same interests, be best friends from the parents, in addition to culturally, which can set it up for essentially failure.
Totally. And there are benefits, right, to, you know, like, I'm about to have my third child and I see such profound differences in my two. I think they are going to be likely very different people. And building that sibling bond has been one of the hardest tasks that I have faced as a parent. And I think that coming at it from the angle of like, this bond has to be built, they are not just going to, I mean, I didn't have one of those kids where like the baby came home and he was immediately drawn to him. And so I think when we have this expectation that like they will just be best friends without me doing anything to help foster that, it's not going to work out. So I do feel like parents carry a big burden there. It's also a lot of adults, siblings become close in adulthood when they can break free from their family dynamic. And so that's another possibility. But giving your child a sibling doesn't always lead to an easier life for them. Sometimes it can actually make their life fundamentally more difficult. And a lot of siblings are scapegoated. And then you got the golden child and all those dynamics that it can go really wrong, I think, too.
Yeah. The last thing I wanted to touch on, Whitney, was for people who maybe – because one thing I've seen in the therapy room, which I don't have enough data to really say for sure. Obviously, I don't think estrangement is a trend, but I think sometimes people jump to conclusions and they will make a fake – people who are never going to get estranged, do not want to be estranged, will sometimes in therapy say like, oh, I'm so glad you talked to me about different ways I can change my relationship with having less contact with my parent, because I thought the only way was estrangement. Have you seen that play out at all? Or what can we, for people who maybe are like, yeah, my parent is emotionally immature, or there are dynamics I'd like to escape from, but I don't feel like estrangement is right for me. Is there any nuances or advice you have for those people?
Yeah, I'm wrestling with this a lot as I'm writing my book on this, because I think we see people fall into a couple of different buckets here. There are the people you're talking about that they haven't done any work on this yet. And so for them, talking about estrangement is not clinically sound. Like,
right.
I think for any therapist, the first questions you should be asking is like, what's going wrong in the relationship? How is it impacting your life? And what have you already tried?
Yes.
Before we start talking about anything else, that's where I want to start. And so that's kind of the framework that I work in. Mm-hmm. Now, someone tells me, I've been trying to set boundaries. They do all this stuff, and I have this really like enmeshed, encroaching, boundary violating parent, and I've been doing this for 10 years. We're going to start talking about what impact is this having on your life. Now, the thing I am noticing is that there is a lot of backlash for that group that maybe doesn't want to cut off their very emotionally immature and potentially abusive parent.
Yeah.
And I don't think that there's any like morality really around this decision. I know we talked about this on our previous episode, and some people sent me some messages like, well, if there's sexual abuse in the family or things like that, there is morality around deciding who you're going to align with. We can put that to the side. I mean more that if you feel like you estranging yourself from this person is going to cause you more harm than it is safety or good, I want to help you find a way to live a good life while still having this person around. And there are a lot of reasons why someone might make that choice, whether it's money, housing, siblings, other children in the family. They have a relationship with one parent and not with the other. Like, we can't demonize people on either end. And so that's where I'm happy that we're having these conversations, because sometimes, especially with a more distant parent who's hands off, there's ways to make it work. Now, if you have one that is physically or emotionally abusive and very encroaching, most of the strategies are going to fail, unfortunately. But that's not all parents.
Yeah. I love that you're talking about that, because yeah, I do think there's this interesting phenomenon of like purity testing a bit that like happens on the internet of even, I think sometimes estrangement is proof of harm of what happened to you. And I think that what you're saying is that your harm or what your parent did can be just as harmful, even if you choose a different path and you still have them like a little bit involved in your life, or you don't go all the way. And it really is so individual and needs to work for you. And I think we need to remind people too that like things can change. I think we're all really bad, myself included, at assuming whatever's happening right now will continue to happen for the rest of time and we will never change and nothing will ever be different. But how, like your relationship with your parent when before you have kids might be different. Maybe when you have kids, it changes. Maybe the opposite happens and then they become way, you know, I know you talk a lot about grandparents.
Totally. I have heard every variation of that. And so that's why I think it's so important to just be like, what do I need to do today? And mm-hmm. and I fundamentally believe that some people are harder to be estranged from than they are to have a contained relationship, because cutting them off fully and announcing that causes a reaction and a ripple effect that is not good for your life. And so
like the people on the Facebook groups.
Yeah, exactly. So like there are ways that you can like finesse this and do this. Also, something I want to mention is that
yeah.
the word estrangement does not have a cohesive definition. So when I did these like hour-long interviews with all these people, there were people that told me, I'm estranged from my mother. And I would ask them, how much do you talk every week?
Wow.
And so that's crazy. But we only talk about these things. So I'm really trying to like redefine in my work. The word estrangement means you do not have a relationship. It is the ceasing of a relationship. And there are so many other things that come before that. But I think a lot of people are using these words and we don't know what they're talking about. And that's why we have to get curious first, because they might say like, yeah, I went no contact with my mom, but like they just meant I needed a break. I didn't want to talk to her and she wouldn't stop bothering me. You know, it's not, it was striking to me how many estranged people still saw or had contact with that family member.
Wow, 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 wow. That is so important. I'm so glad you brought that up. And I think it's because estrangement can be used as a verb, right? Like, I think back to my childhood growing up and how it would be like, oh, we're estranged meant like it was strained, I guess, or something.
Right, right. Like, I don't even remember. Like, I just remember people disappearing. Like, they would, you know, there were people that we would spend holidays with as a kid. And then in my teenage years, I'd be like, that person
what happened
never
to them?
Came around again. I'll ask my mom when I'm like 30, like, what did they do?
Yeah.
And then I get the story, but we didn't talk about it.
Yeah. Like, I think that is such a, that is such fascinating, good data. I think it could absolutely, as we're trying to track these words, as we're trying to understand this epidemic of estrangement, if we don't even agree on the term, that is going to absolutely skew the data too.
Totally. And it inflates things because you, these people here, I think especially parents or people who are looking at this from the outside are like, oh, these people are estranged. And I'm trying to say like, they're kind of not. Like even the people that come to my estranged old child group, they're working through it. Or for them, estrangement includes sending a holiday card. Or, you know, it's so nuanced that I'd like to get clearer on that definition so that when we're talking about it, we understand.
And yeah, I think the other thing that of this, right, is that sometimes the child tries to pull back, tries to, you know, maybe decrease some of the content, and it's the parent that makes it so hard. Can you quickly talk about that?
Yeah, I think I have been fleshing this out with young adults a lot, where I think that this is such a precarious moment where when someone tries to pursue distance, let's say they're like not calling you as much, not talking, the parent like globs onto them and is like, why aren't you talking to me? We need to talk, calling them, and that creates more distance. It's the same chase that we see talked about in a lot of couples therapy, right? Like when someone is being avoidant and you get anxious, they become more avoidant. And I think that's really the problem. We also see quite a few parents who cut their children off in adulthood or who abandon their children throughout their life because they are not meeting their demands. So I've even heard stories of like, you know, I couldn't call my mom as much as she wanted and be there for her and be her therapist. And so she was like, I'm not talking to you anymore. And that's a different type of feeling and estrangement as well.
I want an adult child to talk about how their parent cut them off and talk about that in the Wall Street Journal.
Yes, seriously.
Well, this was so great, so helpful, Whitney. Where can people find you, follow your work, all of that?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Sit With Wit and TikTok, Whitney Goodman, LMFT. And then you can join Calling Home at callinghome.co. And then I also am the host of the Calling Home podcast.
Amazing.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.